And as I've my work has progressed, Agriculture Canada has changed. My roles have evolved a little bit to include biological control programs in canola, for example. I have some projects going with colleagues on the prairies and in Ontario on some of the more serious pests of canola crops. We're looking at importing natural enemies from Europe and Asia for some of these pests. I've got a small project going on spotted wing Drosophila, which is the latest scourge of berry soft fruit production, pretty much across North America now and now throughout Europe. We're looking again at importing natural enemies to release against that pest. So that's sort of my role. I don't know, it's the whole field of biological control has evolved from one where you spend a lot of time looking for a natural enemy and then turning it loose and seeing if it did anything to now surveying for natural enemies and trying to be sure that when you introduce it, you're not going to make a mistake and do something that's going to harm the environment. So our focus in Ag Canada, as well as just from a regulatory perspective, has changed quite dramatically. I don't know quite what else to say. Maybe questions are appropriate. I'm an entomologist. I work on bugs that eat bugs. What else could be more interesting? Yeah?
How do you go about figuring out if we have a pest that's been introduced from somewhere else, and how do you figure out what of their natural enemies can you bring in so that they're not going to be a pest themselves, right?
Okay. Yeah. Good. Great question. So the question is, if we've got an exotic pest that's come in from elsewhere, how do we go about figuring out which of the natural enemies we should import from overseas into Canada? So when we first started doing biological control, the approach was to go to the country or place of origin, find all of the natural enemies we could possibly find, bring them all over, turn them all loose, and hope something established and had an effect. We called that the al dente approach, which is basically you throw it up and hope something sticks. And that, for a lot of reasons, has not been a really good approach. So now what we do is we start off with a survey approach. So we, I'd love to say we, you know, all the Agriculture Canada scientists get to go to all these exotic places and explore for natural enemies in foreign locations. That doesn't happen. We have partnerships with an organization called CABI, which is a non-government organization. It's sort of an FAO-like group that contracts for research with Agriculture Canada. They do a lot of work in developing nations, Africa, Asia, for example. And in our case, we can, because they have labs and scientists in all these places, we can contract with them for exploration. So they do the survey on our behalf, which is really cool because they're in those countries 365 days a year. I can afford to go there for a week at the most. And if I go to a new country, I get to look at whatever the host nation says I can see. If you've got foreign nationals working for the lab in the host country, you get to survey 365 days a year in places we would never get to. So for us, that's worked out really well. We get a good inventory of the natural enemies. Then we take what's called a life table approach. We survey the natural enemies, ask which ones are having the biggest impact on the reproduction of the natural enemy. Who's doing the most? Once we've identified a few candidates, then we have to ask, okay, which ones are safe to introduce? And we do what's called host range testing. So we ask, how many different kinds of hosts do you attack? If a species, a natural enemy, attacks too many, we kind of cross it off the list because we're running the risk of impacting native biodiversity. We don't want to do that. So we screen these things, we import them into quarantine, we test them against our native our native host species that we don't want to impact. If we've got a match, so nobody's impacting, we've got a good probability of success, and an enemy that, as I say, we can safely introduce, then we will go ahead with a test release. And that's simplifying the process. It used to be, 3 to 5 years, we could do a survey, identify some enemies, turn them loose, and generally speaking, we'd walk away from it. And that's 50, 80, 100 years ago. Now, it's a 10 to 15 year process between, first, is the pest even a target? So we've got pests like the sweet midge, which we had on our list, big pest in Ontario on crucifers. We thought, hey, this might be a classical biocontrol target. There just aren't any enemies in Europe that are suitable for introductions. We just within the last year crossed it off our list as a classical biological control target. Other forms of biological control will be still appropriate, but we're not going to pursue it as an importation target. So it's one of the nice things about the new process is we get to say no, we're not going to pursue this, which is not a bad thing.
So you mentioned Spotify for software as one of the new
The big scary one right now is brown marmorated stink bug, which, okay, I see a few heads nodding. So this is are you familiar with stink bugs? They're a fairly large insect, which if you grab it, they stink, okay? And this one has an incredibly broad host range. It puts blemishes on everything from soybeans to corn to apples to cherries to you name it. It's a huge pest in Asia, where it damages all kinds of things there. I shouldn't say a huge, well, okay, there's a few reasons why it's a huge pest in Asia, and I'll come back to that. It's a really scary one. The other scary thing about it is that it invades into homes to overwinter. So where it is established in Pennsylvania and in Portland, and it's moving north. We have it in eastern Canada now. Where it is established, it invades into homes in huge, huge numbers, and overwinters in residents. I've seen pictures of people just sweeping it out by the thousands, and it does smell. So it's not a friendly pest by any stretch. So we're exploring in Asia. We've got some egg parasitoids that look very promising for that one. And I said it's a pest in Asia, but they use an awful lot of pesticides in their orchards, which then means that we're not seeing a lot in the way of egg parasitoids, but they are there. And in natural areas, it looks like they're having a huge impact on stink bug biology. So we're pursuing some of these. Got our fingers crossed. Yeah.
Based on what you've seen with insects, feel like you could say we are indeed in the midst of climate change?
Huh. Yes. Short answer. There are certainly a lot of species that are shifting their range. Just from an anecdotal perspective, I'm seeing an awful lot more diamondback moth on crucifers earlier in the season than I've ever seen it before. So, yeah, that's kind of a 30-year perspective. We're seeing some species like spider mites coming out of diapause earlier. So they're just these subtle shifts. Things have changed. Now, is it climate change or is it shifts in weather patterns or whatever? I don't know. I saw a real neat column in one of the papers not too long ago. It says if you go to a doctor that says you've probably got a fatal disease, and 95% of doctors say, yeah, you probably have that fatal disease, you're probably going to start to think about it. So it's not a bad perspective. I don't know, but I think it's something we can't afford to ignore in agriculture, especially.
What's a crucifer?
Cabbage.
The only one it doesn't know.
Cabbage crops. So canola, cabbages, broccoli, kale, all those things. Broccoli, yeah.
Yes.
Have you hit any sort of real home with biological control?
Oh, yeah.
The greenhouse sector? Like
yeah, in the greenhouse sector, we've got some great examples. In Carcia formosa for whitefly, Phytosaurus persimilis for two-spotted spider mites, various predators for thrips, aphids, we've got some good candidates. We've got some really successful things in the greenhouse sector. It's one of the shining examples of how you go about doing an innovative biological control program. When you get into these classical biological control programs, we've got quite a few. There's a thing called the apple ermine moth. When it moved into North America, it had the potential to be a devastating pest in orchard apple-producing areas across the continent. My colleague, Joan Costantino from Summerland, was involved in introducing a little parasitoid. It's a non-issue. It's not a pest, period. You rarely see it in British Columbia now. It's gone. It's a highly successful program. We've got one evolving on leek moth. It looks like it's going to be a good success. My colleague in Ontario, Peter Mason, is introducing a parasitoid, which is establishing and looks like it's going to have a big impact on, again, a pest in a specialty high-value crop. So yeah, we've had some real home runs. There's a book coming out, and I'll plug it because I'm co-editor. It's Biological Control Programs in Canada. This is an edition that covers the period from 2001 to 2012, so it sort of updates the biocontrol programs that we've been doing. It's a cabbie book, reasonably inexpensive. It's under $100, and kind of summarizes the Canadian efforts in biocontrol. So that Mason and Gillespie should be coming out, as I say, sometime in the next couple of months. I've seen the galleys.
Yeah. Hi, I come from that field crop sector. You talked about parasitoids, and I think that's something quite new for a lot of farmers who farm on a large scale.
Mm-hmm.
And what are your thoughts on how you get the message out to large scale farmers about that, and to be patient and let these insects do their job, mm-hmm. and those sorts of things?
I think there's a need for some demonstration work. Mm-hmm. I think it's where we need to partner with the industry, work with systems we are fairly confident are going to be successful. Unfortunately, in the field crop sector, there aren't a lot just now. One of the things that we're kind of realizing is that there's a disconnect between North America and Europe in terms of landscape scale. And I'm working with a colleague at SFU as a theoretician, and we're kind of looking at the effects of landscape scale in a modeling context. So if you've been to Northern Europe, you look at the canola fields in Northern Europe, and they're very small, and they're interspersed with a lot of natural habitat, with a lot of mixed farms. You go onto the Canadian prairies, and you're looking at, you know, multiple section fields of nothing but canola. You fly over the prairies, and it's miles and miles and miles of bloody canola. And you know, the scale for a little tiny parasitoid that's trying to find a host in that environment, the scale is really different. And so we're starting to even wonder if we're choosing the right parasitoids, given that, you know, we look at the ones that are successful in North America, in Europe, and they might not even be thinking in the same scale. So, but yeah, no, you're right. We need to do an awful lot more in the way of communication, technology transfer, figuring out how to communicate the biology of these things. Aphid parasitoids, natural enemies, are a great example. Those are something that, by and large, in a field crop, you can afford to kind of let them run, because most often the natural enemies will catch up with them. But you just have to be just a little bit patient. So, yeah, kind of addressing the question. I don't know if I kind of got off topic there or what. Yeah.
Is that, this is maybe fishing a bit, but off the basis of what you just said, we're seeing all the shelter belts getting ripped up on the prairies. I mean, is there any relationship there?
Yep. Big relationship. In In Europe, they're starting to bring in legislation which mandates shelter belts because they are important sources of natural enemies. They're important for overwintering for natural enemies. They're important alternate habitat. So the shelter belt concept is one that is fairly well established, and ripping them up, quite frankly, a bad idea. But the farming scale is, I recognize there's other issues there as well in terms of scale and equipment. So, how's that? Did you? I'll say anything. It's Friday afternoon.